Look at the bottom of page 2 in your bulletin, United Methodist teaching on church membership. The first is the vow of reception in the United Methodist Church, which presumes that people are already baptized members of Christ Universal Church. As members of Christ Universal Church, will you be loyal to the United Methodist Church? Now, loyal does not mean that you have to agree with everything the church says and does, because I don't, and I'm a clergy person. It does mean that when you disagree, it's like a good marriage, you disagree within the context of fundamental loyalty. And do all in your power to strengthen its ministries. Do you speak well of your bishop, of your clergy? Do you speak well of your denomination? Do you speak well of your church? Do you understand how it functions? Are you weakening the witness of the United Methodist Church, or are you using your power to strengthen it? Now, with the second vow of membership, we not only take a vow to the United Methodist Church, we take a vow to our local congregation, which is where discipleship happens. As a member of Main Street United Methodist Church, will you faithfully participate in our ministries? I see some people that come to worship late and leave early and never showed up at church supper, and I'm wondering, you know, are they really connected? By your prayers, do you pray daily for your pastor and staff and leaders? Your presence, do you only come to church when you don't have something better to do? When you have guests in your home, do you bring them to church or come yourself as a witness? Your gifts, your money, your talents, your spiritual gifts, and your service, your time and effort. Prayers, presence, service, and gifts are the covenant of membership. So look at the first vow and the second vow. Rate yourself low, number one, or high, or number five. And I hope that during our stewardship season, you will move up in your loyalty and in your faithful participation and in the time and interest in prayers and sacrifice that you give to this outlet of a great Protestant denomination.
How very good and pleasant.
Lori and I have just returned from our 40th high school reunion. And I confess that I was one of the youngest looking men there. The staff is supposed to laugh, so I was just monitoring Lee. If you'll take out your scripture sheet, challenging passage from 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. Paul is laying out an argument for why the churches of northern Greece should give money to the church in Jerusalem as an offering. I do not know of a passage in the New Testament where the Christian doctrine of stewardship is so concentrated as here. Paul covers about five or six different reasons for giving. The bottom line being that Christ gave up his riches to become poor so that by his poverty we might become rich in every way. We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace which God has given the Macedonian churches. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of liberality on their part. For they gave according to their means, and I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own free will, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this not as we expected, but first they gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Accordingly, we have urged Timothy that as he has already made a beginning, he should complete among you this gracious work. Now you excel in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge in all earnestness and in your love. See that you also excel in this gracious work also. And then Paul gives some advice. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love is also genuine. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And in this matter I give you my advice. It is best for you now to complete what a year ago you began not only to do, but to desire, so that your readiness in desiring might be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a man has, not according to what he has not. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of equality, your abundance at the present time should supply their want, so that their abundance may supply your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. The point is this: she who reaps sparingly sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and she who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each of you must do as she has made up her mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that you may always have enough of everything and may provide in abundance for every good work, as it is written, he scatters abroad, he gives to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your resources and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way for great generosity, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. For the rendering of this service not only supplies the wants of the saints, but also overflows in many thanksgivings to God. Under the test of this service, you will glorify God by your obedience in acknowledging the gospel of Christ and by the generosity of your contribution for them and for all others, while they long for you and pray for you because of surpassing grace of God in you. And then Paul ends with a doxology. Praise be to God for his inexpressible gift. This is the word of the Lord. Not long ago, a man called Main Street Church one morning and asked if he could speak to the head hog at the trough. Who said any? The man repeated, I want to speak to the head hog at the trough. Now that she heard correctly, Amy said, sir, if you mean our pastor, You'll have to speak of him with a little more respect, the Reverend Threlkill or Pastor Phil. You cannot refer to him as the head hog at the trough. At this, he came back, "Oh, I see. Well, I have $100,000 I was thinking about donating to the building fund." "Secretary, hold the line. I think the big pig just walked in the door." Money talks, sometimes too loudly. That donor found the secretary and the pastor's button and pushed it. And my today is to poke around in some of the buttons of this scripture until I punch your place of deep motivation. In 35 years of a pastor, I've had the kind of three kinds of givers in every church. There are a few flints, lots of sponges, and a few honeycombs. To get anything out of a flint, you got to hammer it, and then you get only chips and sparks. Then there are the people that are the sponges and lots of sponges. You don't get anything until you squeeze them, and the harder you squeeze them, the more you get until they just quit giving. And then there are the honeycombs, which just continue to overflow with the sweetness of generosity. Now, the Apostle Paul was not above striking the flints and squeezing the sponges, but he preferred the honeycomb churches. And the three churches in northern Greece, what he called Macedonia, the churches of Berea and Philippi and Thessalonica, were poor churches. And yet they had given an abundance of resources so that Paul could have money to take to Jerusalem, to the mother church from where the gospel came, where Peter and James and John were the pastors. They were under persecution. There had been a great famine in the land. And the mother church of all the churches from which the gospel came did not even have food to feed the widows. I love what Methodist pastor Clovis Chapel said about 60 years ago. He said, "I have never felt any hesitation in speaking to my congregation about money. I thrill to it. I revel in it. I love to see the liberal enjoy it. I love to watch the stingy squirm and suffer." Spiritual blessings call for a material response. And finally, the measure of your giving to God is not the tithe, which is a minimum standard of Christian faithfulness. It is whether you are thankful that the gospel got to where you are. It started in Jerusalem with the death and resurrection of Jesus. It spread out to Jewish territories north and west. It then moved to Turkey, into Greek-speaking regions, and finally over into Europe, and Paul was planting churches up and down the coast. And those pagans had turned from polytheism and paganism and immorality to the one God of Israel, to the Ten Commandments, and to His Son, Jesus Christ. They had been saved from spiritual blindness. And it was the weight of that sense of privilege that caused them to want to give through Paul and the emissaries that went with him by letter to the mother church in Jerusalem from which the gospel had begun. Paul says, "For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. They were pleased to do it, and indeed they are in debt to them. For if Gentiles have come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in material blessings." So if someone says, "I ain't going to give because somebody else gives," or "I don't give because I don't like a certain pastor," or "I don't give because of any of a thousand reasons," you're showing that you fundamentally do not understand the value of the gospel that was brought to you by a pastor or Sunday school teacher or pious grandmother. You simply do not understand. Now, the first button that Paul pushes is probably the lowest button on the totem pole of nobility, and it is the big red one of competition and comparison. Did y'all hear about the new evangelism program down at Main Street, South Main Baptist? Do you see how fine the facilities are kept up over at First Baptist? Do you know that Northside Baptist has 2,000 on Sundays? How come the Methodists aren't doing that good? Sometimes I just quit going to big Baptist churches. You know why? Because they got better facilities. They do more in missions. They're doing the gospel in many ways, not all, but in some ways better than we are. Because we've taught our people to tip instead of tithe. And they're bigger on church loyalty than we are. And that you may not like what I'm saying. It's true. Used to be that the First Methodist Church in most towns was the church you go to. That ain't true anymore. It's probably the First Baptist Church. Now that's competition, and I don't like it, but Paul used it. It's a biblical pattern. Paul told the church at Corinth to get with the program, that the poor churches of northern Macedonia had given generously out of poverty, and this was a big city, and Paul said, you guys need to rise up to the example of the churches of northern Greece. You need to rekindle your desire to be part of this great gospel offering, which I and your representatives will carry in pilgrimage to Jerusalem to relieve the mother church from which the gospel came. Paul said they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then to one another, and then to the offering. Now, folks, that's important. Have you given yourself to God? Do you see yourself as an owner or a steward? Have you faced the fact that one day you're going to die? Somebody went by Henry Ford's coffin, and his accountant was standing there. They said, how much did old Henry leave? He said, well, he left it all. There are no pockets in a shroud. Have you given yourself to God, or do you live in fear about money? Second thing, have you given yourself to other Christians? Do you hide from the needs and friendship of other people? Do you ever come to a supper? Are you in a class? Are you connected with other Christians? Paul said, give yourself to God, give yourself to each other, and then learn how to give to missions. Do you trust your leaders? Do you trust your pastor? Do you trust your council chair? Do you trust your church treasurer? Paul sent Timothy to make sure that this thing was enforced. And then the Corinthian church, they had all the spiritual gifts. They had tongues and prophecy and healing. And Paul said, if you can speak in tongues, if you can prophesy, if you can heal the sick, can you give? There for a couple of years I saw bumper stickers that kind of bothered me. Early in the Jesus movement says, if you love Jesus, honk. Remember those bumper stickers? I could tell that the Christian movement was maturing when somebody came up bumper sticker and said, if you love Jesus, tithe. A lot of people honking and only a few tithing. Paul said, as you excel in everything, make sure you excel in this gracious work also. Several years ago, Lori and I went to the Shiloh Fish Camp with the seniors at our church in St. Luke. Now, Shiloh Fish Camp is on Brock's Mill Road, about halfway from Hartsville to Shaw. We got there early because all my seniors wanted to get early and drive home, and they didn't want to do it in the dark. So they eat supper about 5 o'clock. And we got there, and we were the only ones there in the fish camp, and all of a sudden, all these people from Shaw started coming in. I had to get up from my table 5 times to go greet all my parents' friends. And while I was there, two ladies in their elderly years said, Pastor Phil. When they said Pastor Phil, I knew I was in trouble. They said, young Lewis from our church in Chiral is in Carolina's hospital with a brain tumor. Don't you think you ought to go see him? Now, what could I say but yes, ma'am? It made me, who are these people from Chiral assigning me work? Halfway back to the table, I filled up with tears. Because they thought like father, like son. And my dad was the kind of man that if you gave him information, he acted on it. He'd go see somebody that wasn't his patient. And they gave me the highest compliment in the world that I would do what my dad did. So the next day, I'm at Carolina's hospital visiting a guy I hadn't seen since he was 3 years old. We had a wonderful visit. The amazing thing was his brother was in the room. 20 years earlier, his brother had had cancer. He was not my father's patient. My father had driven to Florence to see him. And 20 years later, that man's brother recited for me the exact details of a conversation. And I was blessed beyond imagining. You see, when somebody makes an appeal to the best that's in you, if they see you as a caring person who will go beyond the call, that is a powerful motivation to give your time and your love and your effort. I was more than repaid. Lori and I went back for my 41st high school reunion, and we went up to the ticket counter at Chiral High School to get a ticket for the ball game. And she said, "What's your name?" And I said, "My name's Phil." She said, "What's your last name?" I said, "Thrillkill." She said, "I sure miss your daddy. He's my doctor all my life." I went to the stands to sit with my black and white classmates. They circled around me and told me story after story of my father who had delivered their children. We went to the picnic yesterday afternoon, and people came one after the other. The class of 82 was across the thing. They came and talked to me. "Let me tell you a story about your daddy." But the best one was a girl who was one of the first girls and black girls in 1966 to come to Chiral Elementary School. Remember those days? Remember how tense it was? She's one of the first preschoolers. And she said, she came at me with tears and introduced herself. And she said, "When I was 5 years old in 1958, I went to your father's office." In those days, there was a black side and a white side. And she made the mistake of walking into the white waiting room and sitting down while her mother parked the car. And some southern racist in that room told her to leave, and my dad heard it. He came clumping down the hallway in his Florsheim shoes, and he squatted down in front of this little girl, and he said, "Your name is so-and-so, and you're my patient, and you sit wherever you want to sit." And he went and got her a sucker, and when she finished the sucker, he took her back. So yesterday afternoon, with tears in her eyes, a young black woman, not young anymore, she's 59, she said, "You won't know what it meant for your father to stand up for me that way." And she gave me the impression that that was some of the courage that gave her the courage as a sixth grade girl to walk on a white school ground. Now, folks, I don't mind telling you, when somebody touches that button with me, it is so powerfully motivating to have a rich example to live up to of sacrifice and service and nobility and excellence. And the problem with many people in our culture is they don't have anything to live up to. You have a heritage to live up to. You're part of the foundation of this town. Methodist circuit riders came in here in the first half of the 19th century. Can you imagine what it was to build this place 100 years ago and announce, "We're in business"? Let 2013 be a year of recovery for this church. When you recover your nerve, when you recover your gospel, when you recover your confidence, when you recover your trust in your leaders, when you forgive what's past and you decide that from here we move forward with the gospel of Jesus Christ and the support of all God's people. It doesn't happen all at once, but we need to make a good beginning. And I'm looking for some help. There was an old guy that was converted at a Methodist revival, and he was kind of crusty, and he kept bugging his pastor every week. "I know Christ, give me something to do," but the pastor didn't think he'd do anything. The guy just kept bugging him. So he gave him the list of some prominent church members that hadn't been to church in a while and quit giving, and gave him some stationery and said, "Do what you can do." 3 weeks later, the pastor got a letter from a physician that included a very large check, and here was the note. It said, "Dear pastor, enclosed is a check to make up for my missed offerings. I'm sorry I miss worship so much, and I'll not miss again if it can be prevented. Signed, M.B. Jones, M.D. And then this P.S. Would you kindly tell your secretary there's only one T in dirty and no C in skunk?" John Kennedy said, "Ask not what you can do for your country, but what your country can do for you." That's backwards, isn't it? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Paul used that same pattern when he said that the grace of Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor. What did it mean for God the Son to give up the glories of heaven and be reduced to two cells dividing in the dark womb of a little Palestinian virgin girl? What did it mean for him to be squeezed through the birth canal and have his umbilical cord cut to nurse at his mother's breast? What did it mean for Jesus to have colic and all the human bodily process? What did it mean for him to grow up sometimes without enough to eat in occupied territory? What did it mean for him to walk the way of the cross and to die naked like a pauper? The Son of God came down from heaven and became poor so he could reach everybody, so that by his poverty, his embrace of death and sin and evil, we might be made rich in the things of God. I'm not trying to beat money out of you. I want you to understand what the gospel is, so that you can start giving a percentage of your income and raise it a percent every 6 months and start moving towards the tithe and buy stock in your church and help us to do all that God has called us to do here at Greenwood and around the world. Some people give nothing at all. They just say they coast on other people's giving. Some people give to special offerings. Some people give with a good attitude but don't give much. Some people give enough but only after being hammered. Some people give enough without being asked. Some people give without anyone knowing. And some people go eliminate the causes of poverty. Now, folks, I'm not telling you that if you give, God's going to give you money back, though he might. Martin Luther said the reason our fingers don't have webs between them is so the money can slip through. And the real beneficiary of giving is not that God floods you back on some kind of health and wealth program. It's that when you give, you have to let go of something. Your hands loosen up. You're open to getting benefits from God. Your heart opens up. You see what money and prayer can do. And Paul said, if you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you reap bountifully. He's not saying he'll make you rich in this world's standards, though he might. It's not beyond God to give people money who can be trusted with it. Heard a farmer one same time, Preacher Phil, if you're going to be cheap with something as a farmer, don't be cheap with the seed. 2 Sundays from now, you'll get a chance to declare your giving for the year. If both of you work, make a gift and put it together. Every child, every teenager, every 3-year-old should get a pledge card. Children should be taught to give by the example of their parents. I ask teenagers, how much money do you control? And it's surprising. It includes birthday money and Christmas money, kids. You got 10 apples, give one to God. Look what God will do with your life. I know families where one member a tither and one isn't a tither. I know families where the woman is faithful and the man's a skinflint and he resists her giving. And that guy does not go that it's that woman's faithfulness to God that's keeping the blessing of God on that home. Deep down, do you want to be a good man or a good woman? Do you want some preacher at your funeral to quote from Psalm 112? They scatter abroad, they give to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. I'm not trying to beat money out of you. I'm trying to help you recover your nerve and to be vitally invested in your church through your prayers, your presence, your gifts, and your service. Used to be that 50 years ago, all Methodist ministers ended their sermon with a poem. I do that rarely, but I do it today. Go give to the needy, sweet charity's bread, for giving is living, the angel said. And must I be giving again and again, my peevish, petulant answer read? Oh no, said the angel, piercing me through, just give to the master stops giving to you. On November 4th, we're having a free catered lunch, so you'll come. One service at 10:30. The band will play, the organ will play, we'll all be together, and we'll hear Dr. Reggie Thaxton, a Methodist pastor, talk about the joy of giving. I want you to be here. I want you to pray. I want you to know that your pastor and his wife will be once again making a commitment to give beyond the tithe, to the general budget, because we trust our financial leaders. And we invite you to follow our example, to take God's hand, and to restore strength to the church to which you have pledged to be loyal. Take your hymnal and turn to number 399. I want you to read the first, you stay seated, read the first stanza with me. I'll sing two and then we'll all sing three. Wait. It's not her fault. I confused her. Read stanza one with me. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my hands and let them move at the impulse of Thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for Thee. Now just listen. Okay, Joyce. Take my life and let me sing always only for my King. Take my lips and let them be filled with messages from Thee. Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. Take my intellect and use every power as Thou shalt choose. Together. Take my will and make it Thine. It shall be no longer mine. Take my heart, it is Thine own. It shall be Thy royal throne. Take my love, my Lord, I pour. At Thy feet is treasure store. Take myself and I.